Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 17th, 2008, and this is show number 165. Well, I am fresh back from the New Media Expo out in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, you might remember this was originally called the Portable Media Expo. Then it was called the Portable and New Media Expo. I don't know, this expo kind of has an identity crisis, but it's really the Podcast Expo. They moved it over to Las Vegas from Ontario, California, and I think their idea was to get it bigger than it was before, which is good, but that's not exactly what happened. It seemed to be about the same size, possibly even a little bit smaller. There's some really good side effects of it being a small show, though. You have unbelievable access to the other podcasters. I mean, the big famous ones and the little teeny ones. Everybody just seems to be more on an even keel, and there's not a lot of big, fame and fortune for some, and you can't get to them or anything like that. The chances to talk to fun people are just fantastic. I have been on the Mac Roundtable for quite a while now, but there were people that I've been on the show with or will soon be on the show with that I've never met before, like Chuck Joyner of Mac Notables and Dave Hamilton of the Mac Observer. Somehow I had never met them before. And, Jeff Gamet also. Just all these people that I hadn't gotten to meet before. It was really fun going out to dinner and just hanging out, having a really good time. I also enjoyed hanging out with some old friends like John Chambers, Andy McCaskey, Ken Ray, Don McAllister, Victor Cahiao, Chris Christensen. I could just go on and on. The number of people I met, the old friends, the new friends. It was just really, really a great time. I put a link in the show notes to a Facebook photo album that I created of all my pics from the show. It was a great time. Just had such a good time. By the way, you don't have to be in Facebook in order to look at these photos, but if you do join Facebook and you want to be my friend, I will probably say yes. I like being friends with people who like the show. That's a lot of fun. One of the keynote speakers was the marketing director for BlendTech. These are the guys that do willitblend.com. This guy was fantastic. He told this great story about how he was hired as the marketing director for BlendTech, and they had a great blender that they used in their commercial products and a great blender for their home products. I'm sorry, for business and for home products, but they didn't have any brand recognition for their home products. Nobody knew who they were. So they hired this guy as the marketing director, and one day he's been there about a couple of months, and he goes into this lab, and there's sawdust all over the floor. He's like, what the heck? What's all this sawdust? What's going on? And the guy said, oh, you know, the CEO, he's been testing blenders. He's been grinding up rakes. I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, if you haven't ever seen a Willet Blend ad or one of the Willet Blend videos, you got to go over and see these. These are the guys that ground up an iPhone. The little glow sticks, they ground those up. Cubic zirconium, showed a great one with Chuck Norris. That was a really, really good one. Anyway, he said that, he looked at this guy doing this great work here, grinding up things, showing off what the blender could do. And he thought, man, we've got a fantastic marketing opportunity here. He said, give me $50 for the marketing campaign. Went out and got a lab coat for the guy, some goggles, and a domain name. And the rest, as they say, is history. Their sales have gone up sevenfold in the home market because of this, these videos. They also said that they don't have to like dress the guy up and have him act because this is what he was already doing anyway. I mean, that's the CEO and an inventor of the product is the guy that's doing all the grinding. And of course, it was really fun when he ground up a rake for us right in front of us. That was a lot of fun. I got to tell you, though, the peak moment for me was when I got to be on Twit Live with Leo Laporte and Amber MacArthur. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Leo is live on Stick'Em pretty much all day, every day, about 20 hours a week. He does live video, and he was doing it live from the show floor, and he invited podcasters to come up there and be on the air with him. So, but here's the really, really funny story. I love how this happened. So Leo's downstairs in the showroom floor, and he's doing Twit Live. And he's got a chat room open, you know, on Stick'Em. And I happen to be upstairs in one of the conferences. So the Mac Mommy of the MacMommy.blogspot.com was in the chat session on Twit Live, and she said hi to Leo, and Leo said hi back to her, and so she's chatting, and he's talking, and then she says to him, she says, hey, we should get Allison on the show, to which Leo says something along the lines of, well, Allison's here, we need to get her up here. So here's when it gets really funny. So here, he's in Las Vegas. He's talking out loud to Melissa, the Mac Mommy, who's sitting in, I think, Arizona. she gets on, somehow contacts Rob Hansen of switchmac.com.blogspot.com. He's over in England, right? And he sends a tweet to me over Twitter, which I read upstairs from Leo and run downstairs to go talk to him. So it went from the downstairs of the convention center to Arizona to England to the upstairs for me to go basically downstairs. Anyway, it was really, really fun. I had a great time talking to him. And the best part was I took my Zoom H2 up there with me. Amber very graciously said, hey, can I hold the microphone for you? And I got a recording of that conversation, and I'm going to play that for you right now. The audio is a little bit rugged before Amber picks up the mic, but once she gets it, it's going to be a little bit better. So check this out. That's right.
Hey,
I am Amber.
Silicon.
How you doing?
Hey,
Neil.
Got Allison.
Yeah.
Allison Sheridan.
This is not your cousin,
I'm
Allison.
So glad.
Sheridan.
I know. I'm so glad to meet you. Oh, and she's got the Dignation T-shirt.
I've got to be on two mics. I'm trying to mic you guys too.
Why don't I hold
sure.
This
there
thing.
You go.
I'm so glad to meet. Well, we've met before.
We've talked several times. Yeah.
But I'm so glad to see you.
We were chatting
in the chat room, and the mommy cat said, "I think Allison is in." I said, "Send Allison over immediately."
Well, I ran down. I was upstairs. I left some poor guy doing a great presentation. I felt kind of bad.
Oh no!
I'm so glad you made it. I'm sorry to keep you.
I gotta say, first thing, have you lost weight, Leo? You look fantastic.
Well, you've been working out, haven't you? I've been working out.
I haven't lost weight.
Thank you.
No, you look great.
Until I feed him with all these chocolates.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, so what would be worse? If I had to follow the teen sex podcast, the naked podcast. No, but she brings gifts.
Yeah,
so
that's
I thought
true.
I was okay following the horse guy.
Where's your gifts? You didn't get the memo? Must bring gifts. Allison, thank you so much.
So good.
Where would you stick it?
It's a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias.
Oh,
a lot of sarcasm on that part. You know?
Nozilla cast. Where's the name Nozilla?
It's my name spelled backwards. Not everybody's figured that out. It's so funny. It seems really obvious to
me. That's great. That's such an Oprah move.
So slow. Allison backwards Nozilla.
Nobody gets that.
And your last name is Zach?
Yeah.
No.
That would be hard to say. I do freeware, shareware, open source tools. I do some Windows stuff. I did a review of the HP Mini Note last week.
Which I actually like.
I've got it here if you want to play with it.
Yeah, Windows.
It's
did
not
you get
bad.
The Linux one?
Yeah, I got the Windows one. Had to scrape Vista off because it crashed every time I woke it up. So I got XP on it. Now it's running pretty well, but I can barely see it.
It's a cute little notebook.
Yeah, it's lighter than a MacBook Air. It's 2.8 pounds.
Yeah, it's one of these new netbooks.
Yeah, little square thing. The screen is 9 inches across, but it's 1280 by 768.
I have an Asus EPC, which I really like, and this is kind of the next generation.
I looked at the EPC, but I wanted to go up a little higher in screen resolution and a lot more disk space because they only had the flash drives, I think.
Yeah,
it's got like 120 gig hard drive. It's $600.
It has a hard drive?
Except that it runs Windows. What's that for?
So it's interesting. So NozillaCast has a Mac bias, but you're buying a Windows machine. So
I like Windows both. I mean, I think the people who are going to win are the ones who will do everything. I can still like Macs better, but it's a cool little tool, you know?
You've been around for this. How long have you been doing this show?
I've been doing it 3.5 years.
This is one of the older podcasts.
Yeah, it's really great.
I'm glad you're doing well.
Yeah, 164 shows, I think, something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
I've also started another series called Podcasting on Podcasting. So, and I've got it in line with my regular show, but I'm going to release it separately too, just for the newbie who's like, well, so what's a blog for? What kind of mic do I need? What do I do? And I'm just going from
really
the real, real basic building blocks. People kept asking me, and all the other podcasts are going, oh, good, you tell them how to do it. I'm tired of teaching people. So that seems like kind of fun.
That's,
too.
I think, kind of our mandate, right, is to help other people get started. Right?
Well, people say, why do you do this for free? You know, I'm going to put in, you know, I only do like 10 or 15 hours a week. But I say, well, because some guy helped me set up my WordPress blog for free, and somebody else helped me do this for free, and somebody helped me do that for free.
It's really just a hobby and about sharing all your knowledge.
Gotta
give
back. I tell people how much you learn, too. It's not how much you teach, it's how much you learn, because the people that write to you, it's just fantastic.
And I think how many people you meet in the space. That's what I love the most about it, is just from starting. When I started my podcast, it was really about the community you kind of develop and you get to go to events like this.
Definitely. One of my best friends now is Bart Bouchat, who listened to my podcast, and now I do a segment with him every week called Chit Chat Across the Pond. And he's in Ireland,
that's
and
so
we do
cute.
A little conversation.
I love it.
He's now one of my best friends. I've never met him.
Never met him.
I may someday.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, this is why events like this are great, because we get to meet people like you, and I met you 3 years ago, I guess it was, at probably Podcast Expo.
I think I bother you every time I see you.
It's great to see you. I always say, I got you water at Macworld,
and you liked me. Yeah, not his cousin Allison.
Not my cousin Allison's here. So nice to to see you, Allison.
Right, thank you very much.
Silicast.
So
it's Allison spelled backwards. No, silicast.com, yeah?
As that or podfeet.com. I bought every permutation. Make sure you find it.
What are you using there?
That's a Zoom H2.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, it's great.
Randall's a big H2 fan.
Oh, yeah, I was just showing Dean that. Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know, I bought that, and I bought the HMB flash mic, and I was using the flash mic, and it died. And I have to call HMB because it was
oh, jeez, this is only $200.
I know, and I'm using that.
Four-channel stereo.
I know, it's great.
It works great. Yeah.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
So as you can imagine, I've pretty much died and gone to heaven right now. You know, I got to give a great thanks and a huge shout out to the Mac Mommy and Rob Hansen for an international effort. All right, that's probably enough about the podcast expo for now. Back to work. So I had an epiphany about my podcasting on podcasting series while I was at the show. Now I know the typical joke, it didn't hurt. Anyway, I had struggled for a long time about whether or not I should put podcasting and podcasting in series with my regular show or whether I should have it standalone. The advantage of standalone is that people who don't want to listen to it don't get it. They get just the regular show. But the disadvantage was I would have to do all this extra work to create a separate feed. And I figured, okay, well, if you don't want it, you can just skip those episodes. They're clearly marked and everything, so it's not a problem. But then I get the disadvantage of I can't tell someone, here, come over here and subscribe to Podcasting on Podcasting, because they're going to get the regular show that maybe they don't want. So I went back and forth, and I finally did decide to put it in line with the show, but disappointed that I couldn't advertise that piece just on its own. Well, the epiphany I had happened when I was doing the instructions last week on how to create a new podcast using Feeder. It occurred to me while I was at the show that all I had to do was create a new podcast, just like I showed you in the instructions last week, and then drag those same episodes from the NoSillaCast feed down into the Podcast on Podcasting feed and publish that on its own. It turns out it's going to point to the same files, right? Because the audio files are already up online, so you can just point to those. You don't have to re-upload them or anything like that. You create a second feed, but that's just another tiny little XML file that's just going to have the Podcasting on Podcasting information in it. So I hardly have to do any extra work at all. So I have created that as a separate series. I've submitted it to iTunes, but it hasn't come back as being approved yet, so we'll have to wait until that comes through. But I'm sure in short order it will, and then I'll be able to have the Podcasting on Podcasting as a separate feed. I am going to still keep it in line with this show because I don't think there's much of a disadvantage to that, and people seem to like hearing it. I got some feedback from Jesse from Dubuque. He sent in this note. Here's what he said. In your latest podcast, you mentioned how you set the Schwartzes up with iChat. Another IM application that you might want to recommend instead is Adium, which is what my brother and I use instead of iChat. The main reason is because it supports a much wider range of accounts than iChat does. iChat only supports AIM/MobileMe, MSN, Yahoo, and Google Talk. Adium supports all of these account types, and he included a nice screenshot that I put in the show notes. I had no idea Adium did so many types. I mean, seriously, it supports Novell GroupWise, LiveJournal, MySpace IM. I didn't even know those protocols existed. Well, Jesse went on to say, plus they have a beta version out that supports Facebook chat, but I don't use the chat features on Facebook that much, so I'll just wait until the full version is released. And finally, the price of Adium, free, can't be beat. Well, thanks for the tip, Jesse. I have used Adium on and off over the years. I introduced it to both my kids, and that's what they both use. They really, really like it. I do think it's a fabulous solution for a lot of people. In the case of the Schwartzes, though, I still think iChat was a better choice because the main thing they wanted to do was video chat for when their son moves away to Michigan for college. In my opinion, Skype is a better choice for video, but I thought maybe iChat would scare them less than starting with a whole other application since they have accounts that'll work with iChat. But anybody else who's just interested in a great chat client that'll run everything, I mean, let me look at it all. AOL Instant Messenger, Jabber, MSN Messenger, Yahoo Messenger, .Mac, Bonjour, Gadu Gadu, whatever the heck that is, Google Talk, ICQ, LiveJournal, Lotus Same Time, MySpace IM, Novell GroupWise, QQ, don't know what that is, Sip Simple, and Yahoo Japan, and Zephyr. I want Zephyr. What's Zephyr? That sounds cool. Well, anyway, thanks a lot, Jesse. This is a great tip.
Dumb questions.
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Last week on Dumb Question Corner, we had a question about how to manage podcasts. Eddie wrote in with a really interesting technique that was different than what I suggested. Hey, Allison, I enjoyed your latest podcast and thought I would drop you a tip on how I manage my podcast. What I do is set up a smart playlist in iTunes of podcasts with a play count of zero and set my iPod to sync with that playlist. So every time I sync my iPod, iTunes changes the play count on the podcasts I listen to and removes them from the playlist and adds the new podcast that I've downloaded. I plug my iPod into my computer every night and my old shows are removed and the new ones are added. Well, Eddie, this is a great idea. I'd never thought of that. I played around with it a little and I realized I could do even more customization to make it work for me. For example, I listen to Leo's Tech Guy show on a different iPod. I call it my car iPod. That's all I listen to in the car is Leo's Tech Guy show. So I added a constraint to the playlist to say, title does not include the Tech Guy. And I also told it not to include video podcasts. So now on that separate video or iPod, I get only the podcasts that I haven't listened to aren't video and they aren't Leo's Tech Guy show. Come to think of it, I could set it up to be a playlist just for, I could have another playlist for Leo's Tech Guy. I could call it my car iPod playlist and set that one up for the car iPod. This is going to be great. Thanks, Eddie. Well, it's my turn for a dumb question. I have one that I think fits perfectly into Dumb Question Corner. So, headphones have an L and an R in them for left and right ears. On the iPod, iPhone headphones, putting the R in your right ear leaves the microphone on your right-hand side. But a couple of times now, I've noticed people wearing them with the microphone on the left. I asked the first person about it, and they said, why does it matter? To which I wittily replied, because there must be a reason, because they put the R and the L on it. And I realized I don't know if it matters. I was hoping to say that maybe they were shaped differently to fit right and left, but I think they're actually identical. When I look at them, I can't, there might be a slight difference, but the newer ones, I couldn't really tell the difference. So my dumb question is, does it matter if they're on the right or the left? I want to know. Well, I continue to be very excited about having Screen Steps as a sponsor for the show. You know, if you've been listening for any length of time, that I will not say nice things about something if I don't really mean it. I might say something mean that I don't mean, but I never say something nice that I don't mean. It's been hard for me to agree to advertising deals as a result. Luckily, I found Screen Steps because I can throw 100% of my support in for this tool. Screen Steps is interesting to me because I find that I keep trying to make it harder than it is. The Screen Steps workflow is so natural, but only if you've never been forced to trying to document using screenshots and some dreadful tool like Microsoft Office. Old habits die hard, and you really have to shake off the tendency to overcomplicate things because Screen Steps is so simple. When you create a Screen Steps tutorial, you can create just one little step for someone. Your dad wants to know where his iDisk is? Create one step in Screen Steps where you screenshot the iDisk, put some annotation on the image, throw in some text at the bottom telling him what to do with it, take another screenshot with it open, maybe put an arrow pointing out his public folder, maybe even do a screenshot of a pull-down showing him how to view public folders using Go iDisk. That's called a step. Just those little things that we put together, that's a step. But what if you have a series of steps? Maybe you've got something just a bit more complicated and you want to break up the steps into separate lessons. That's easy too. You can create a bunch of steps and have them organized into lessons. Maybe you don't want to teach too much at one time, so you want to give Dad one lesson at a time on a bunch of subjects. Screen Steps makes it all so easy. After you get a lot of lessons together, if you want to give them the whole thing, you can create a manual out of a bunch of lessons and put those together. Another feature I just discovered recently, I mean, just like I wasn't paying attention because, you know, I don't like read the manual or anything like that, I realized that you can tag your lessons. I'm only lately starting to get tagging in the real world, and in Screen Steps, I really get it. If you create a ton of lessons, you can tag them to make them easier to search for. In my case, for instance, I've done a lot of lessons for podcasting on podcasting, so I tagged all of them with POP. But I also talk about Feeder a lot, so I tagged the Feeder tutorial with POP and Feeder. Now, 6 months from now, when I need to find that one step that I can't remember the name of, but I know it had something to do with Feeder, I can just click on the Feeder tag in the inside Screen Steps. I should also mention that Screen Steps has a search field that searches everything you've typed in. It works great. You can find stuff really, really easily. By the way, when I was at the show, I showed off Screen Steps to Andy McCaskey of the Slashdot Review podcast. I was probably 2 minutes into the demo when he whipped out his notebook and wrote down the URL so he could run back and write it, buy it right away. I can't be making this stuff up, guys. I don't get any sales because he did that. I just really believe in the product and love showing it off. If you find yourself answering questions on how to do things on your Mac or your PC, or you're a software developer maybe, and you need to create documentation for your product, you'd like a delightfully easy way to make beautiful documentation, click the link to screensteps.com in the sidebar and enter the coupon code NOSILLA, that's all capital letters, for 25% off, and make yourself happy. Well, listener Jane has sent in the third installment of her Canon SLR story. I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Allison. It's Jane, and I thought I'd let you know how things were going with my new Canon 450D or Rebel XSI digital SLR camera. All 12 megapixels of it. Did I mention it's got 12 megapixels? There are two aspects of photography that I took more interest in recently, namely depth of field and image cropping. I finally managed to spend a bit of time with the camera and enjoyed a couple of long sessions where I had plenty of time to mess around with it. On one occasion, a couple of weeks ago, it stretched into a 5-hour session waiting for a 750-year-old Boab tree to be planted in King's Park. The tree had been transported over 3,000 kilometres from its home in northwestern Australia, where it stood in the way of the construction of a new highway in the Kimberley. On that long day of waiting around in King's Park for the giant tree to be hoisted into place, I took over 300 shots. But Bart will be pleased to know that later I whittled, or barted, them down to around just half that number. Although it was a long day of meandering around the park, it gave me time to practice different shots with both of my lenses. It was the first time I'd really used the 55-250mm lens, and I was enjoying exploring its capabilities, as much as someone with my lack of expertise could do. I found that the reduced depth of field when shooting with the longer focal length isolated the subject from its background beautifully. Now, this may sound very basic stuff to the photographers amongst you, but I had never really experimented much with this technique before. Remember that back in my previous SLR days, I was using 35mm film and was always trying not to waste the film, so experimentation was sadly not something I did much of. But until last week, I hadn't realised the extent to which it could be used to great effect. Previously, I would not have thought of using a telephoto lens to shoot close-up shots of garden flowers, but here in the park, with a few hours to kill, I was ramping up, or is that down, the f-stops, so that I had the shortest depth of field for some of my shots. One of the shots that pleased me that day was not of a beautiful flower or insect, but of a TV news cameraman shot from behind. Now, there is nothing remotely outstanding about this shot. The camera was set to landscape mode, so I can't even take credit for choosing the correct f-stop to achieve the result. But I was really pleased with the contrast between the sharpness of the cameraman and the blurred vegetation in the distance. It was no big deal, but it just made me smile for some reason. Then last week, another photo opportunity came my way when Perth was visited by the US Secretary of State, Dr. Condoleezza Rice. She was in town for all of 18 hours. But for Perth, that's a major event, as we are rarely visited by dignitaries on this side of Australia. So I gathered up my Canon and its two lenses, together with the essential Mars bar, and headed off to, yes, you've guessed it, King's Park. I seem to spend a heck of a lot of time there, but it is such a lovely place. Well, that day it was the telephoto lens that stayed attached to the camera, in the hope of catching a worthwhile close-up shot of Condoleezza Rice. I was there far too early and had a couple of hours to kill, so I tried to look like a tourist in order that the throng of police and secret squirrel security agents wouldn't start looking at me sideways, but they did anyway. I tried to ingratiate myself with a few of them, to find out what time she was due, but for obvious security reasons, they wouldn't tell me. So I just asked a passing TV reporter, and he told me when she would arrive. I filled the time by snapping away at all sorts of plant life, views of rivers and parkscapes. As the arrival time approached, I kept waiting for the crowds to build, and stayed put at the front of the cordon for fear of losing my place. but I'm pretty sure the police and security outnumbered the public all through the event. I had no trouble getting a clear view. At the appropriate time, the motorcade drew up, and out stepped various blokes talking to themselves while adjusting their hearing aids. Then Condoleezza Rice appeared next to the Australian Foreign Affairs Minister, Stephen Smith. I raised my camera and started snapping away. I was pleased at how close I could get with the telephoto zoomed up to the 250mm end of its range as they walked to the war memorial where she laid a wreath. The small crowd of onlookers followed her through the park. Dr. Rice and the minister held a seemingly endless press conference for the eager reporters, and when eventually she emerged, there was a flurry of photographic activity as the press photographers with their huge lenses leapt into action. A few minutes later, Dr. Rice was whisked away to the airport for onward travel to New Zealand. Once home, I downloaded my photos and thought I heard Bart's voice somewhere in my head, so I immediately bartered a whole bunch of less-than-average photos and was free of his imaginary nagging once more. "Only joking, Bart. You have a lovely voice." I was pleased that I had managed to get one shot of Condoleezza Rice looking directly towards my camera. I cropped as tightly as the pixel count would allow. For some reason, the Canon had hiked up the ISO to 800 for this shot, so hence the picture is a little grainy. The true benefit of having such a high megapixel camera must surely be borne out in the ability to crop to your heart's content when necessary. And I thought 12 megapixel was going to be over the top for me. No way. Give me more. One recent Sunday, Perth awoke to a miserable wet day. I had hoped for weather of a more sunny nature, but it was not to be. What to do on a cold, wet Sunday in Perth, but to go peer through car showroom windows and dream of European autobahn and snaking country roads? And so we set off to seek out exquisite and mostly expensive metal. I took my camera along and fired off a few shots at the exotic automotive delights that we came across. I even let my husband take one photograph. One thing I found was that when shooting reflective chrome, no matter where you try to position yourself, you can't help appearing as a reflection in the shot in some form or other. Once home, I again bartered quite a few of the photos to the trash, and then went into a frenzy of cropping. An hour or so later, I was happy with the results of about a dozen of my shots and uploaded them to Flickr. In a relatively short time, I have become much more familiar with my Canon and now feel at ease when using its controls and functions. The start-up time is very snappy, and I've yet to be caught out having to wait for the camera to be ready for a shot. It feels very lightweight compared to the old Olympus, but ultimately not as sturdy. I find the hand grip to be rather narrow, whereas the grip of the Olympus Powerwinder filled my hand, and I was able to hold the camera by it with very little finger pressure, if you can imagine what I'm talking about. I wonder if the Nikons are any better in that respect. I just love the 3-inch screen. It's bright and clear for reviewing photos, and the menus displayed upon it have a wonderfully large text and can be read in the brightest of Australian sunlight. It would have been interesting to have had a Nikon to use alongside my Canon for the last few weeks for a true comparison, but a decision had to be made at the time of purchase, and I am more than happy with my choice. I have to admit that at first the Canon felt strangely alien in my hands. I had a longing to resurrect my old Olympus OM2 from the cupboard, but knew that that was not the answer. It was just going to take time to get to know this new friend, and I'm sure we'll have as many happy years together as I had with the old 35mm Olympus. You can read more about that wonderful 750-year-old Boab tree that I mentioned earlier by going to my website at galacticstrings.com. And you can follow the Flickr link from there to have a squint at a few of my photos, where any constructive comments will be most welcome. Cheers, and see you later.
Thanks for the story, Jane. I love how you describe things. Now, when you bartered your photos from 300 photos down to maybe half as many, not sure you're using the term correctly. See, I think when you bart your photos, you have to go from 300 down to maybe 5 or possibly 10. I am so glad to see so many new phrases coming out of his name. For instance, this weekend, I was trying to tell Steve about my new laptop specs, and I said, yeah, it's got 2 gigabytes of RAM in it. He cracked up. I think he sent Bart an email right after that. Anyway, you mentioned how using the long 250-millimeter lens gave you a nice shallow depth of field. I also didn't know about that technique until I just got lucky with it once. I had the long lens on while I was shooting a cross-country meet. I mean, these kids can be miles away when they're running a course. But at the end of the day, I wanted to take a portrait of my son Kyle and his girlfriend. But I knew they wouldn't wait while I switched lenses, so I just ran back and zoomed way up on them. I got a fabulous photo of them that way. The lighting was just turning golden in the setting sun. They're crisply in focus, and it's completely blurred behind them. I just love this picture. I put that picture in the show notes so you can see for yourself how cool this technique can be. I also put a link in the show notes to galacticstrings.com so people can check out your Flickr photos. Good friend of the show, Sam Caldwell, you've heard from him before, of the Windows to Apples podcast, is always coming up with something new and different. He's very, very creative. He's created a podcast with an animated host. I'm not sure what software he uses to run his animations, but it's really fascinating to watch. He took that inventiveness up a notch this week when he actually had his animated host interview me. He used Uvu to create the video telecon between the animated guy and me, and using the PC version of the software of Uvu, he was able to actually record the conversation. You can't record the video conversation on Uvu on the Mac client yet. There's a beta coming out, but you can on Windows. Well, the hard part about doing this was that it had to be a scripted conversation. So I'm using canned answers that he and I developed to questions the animated guy would be asking me. It's the first step in what could prove to be a fascinating medium, and I think you'd be intrigued by watching it. The animated host first explains how Uvu fits into the world of video teleconferencing, talking about Skype and some other tools. So the interview with me is about halfway through the show. He posted it up on Vidler, and one of the cool things about Vidler is as an observer, you can actually insert comments on the timeline of the video. So I inserted one right where he starts talking to me so you can find it easily. One disclaimer on the video, the audio breaks up in Uvu for my side of the interview. I really didn't stutter as much as it sounds like I did. I put a link in the show notes to the video over at vidler.com so you can watch it for yourself. Well, speaking of my genuine advertising and the fact that I won't advertise for something I don't believe in, I can prove that I'm genuine when I tell you about how great Honda Bob is. This week at the expo, I hung out with some really fun guys at a bar called Quarks. Yeah, it was at the Star Trek Experience. We're geeks. Cut me some slack. Anyway, I recorded about a half-hour discussion where we talked about shoes, what we eat, quantum mechanics. In the middle of that, I did a spontaneous testimonial for Honda Bob. Not quite sure how we ended up talking about Honda Bob. It was some transition between the shoes and quantum mechanics. But I think you'll enjoy the story I tell and the very true comments that my friend says at the end.
Honda Bob has been my mechanic for 30 years because of them.
Yeah.
Because I took my Honda into the Honda dealer. They told me it was a... I'm going to miss the name of what it was, but whatever it was, they said it was a distributor thing. It wasn't a distributor cap at the time, it was a unit they said they had to completely replace.
Okay.
I called Honda Bob, and Honda Bob said, no, I can take that apart and clean it.
Mm-hmm.
He cleaned it for $80.
Yeah.
It was $600 at the mechanic shop. So the reason I go to him is because he doesn't lie to me. He always tells me the truth.
And that's because, one, he's honest, and it's a financial decision, because unfortunately, cash flow is finite. So, I mean, that really isn't a, I like chaos in my life, that's a, I don't have $4 million to waste on freaking mechanics.
Right.
So.
Well, but what he did was he made an investment. He could have told me $400. But
yeah.
Because he told me $80, 30 years later,
going
to that mechanic.
Well, see,
he's made
a
truckload of money on me because he told me the truth.
Well, that's a person that understands business. Yeah, I can screw over this customer and keep him once. I can do a good job and keep this person forever.
Yeah.
That's called good business.
Isn't that the truth? It's just good business. Well, for the kind of care for your Honda or Acura that I'm getting, if you're living in the Los Angeles or Orange County area, you can give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or shoot him an email over at hjbob@aol.com. HA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. And it's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How are you doing today, Bart?
I'm doing fine. We haven't flooded yet, which is good because the forecast here is ridiculous. I think in the last 2 days we had 70 millimeters of rain, which is the average for the entire month. And then last Sunday we had 76 within 2 hours. So all the rivers are really, really high, and I'm just waiting to wake up one morning and, you know, find the water in the house. It's pretty bad around here.
For our American listeners, that's 2¾ inches of rain in 2 days. For California, I think that's about a quarter of our yearly rainfall.
Yeah, and then a week ago today, we had 76 millimeters in 2 hours.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, that did a lot of damage, actually. The town next to us, the sewage sort of came up through the manholes and covered the main street.
Ew. Okay, moving on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something almost as revolting. How can we replace Mobile Me?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm sort of trying to figure out. The bill came in from Apple, and it's due on the 5th of September, and I've decided I'm going to have a go at replacing it. And if I succeed, then I'm just going to not pay Apple. And if I don't succeed, I'll grudgingly continue on with Mobile Me. But I want to give it a shot, you know, at avoiding Mobile Me.
So what are the parts of Mobile Me that you would like it to do that you're trying to replace? Because obviously you probably don't use everything that would be in Mobile Me.
No, I certainly don't. I don't use the galleries or any of that kind of stuff. What I don't think is physically possible to replace, and I've sort of given up on because I don't think it's worth €99 a year, is syncing the preferences for your apps from one machine to another. I do not think there's another solution out there. I think Mobile Me is the only game in town for that one. I know there's other options for syncing bookmarks. I haven't looked into them yet, but that's not as important as everything else. So I'm sort of putting that one to the bottom of my list.
I think but the big ones Fox from Mark is good, by the way.
Which?
Fox Marks.
Yeah, that's the top of my list to try. So probably by next week I'll be talking to you about that. But I guess the big two for me are calendar syncing and iDisk. And I'm looking into the iDisk first, just because actually being able to get at your files from all your different machines is probably the most important. Because if I were to absolutely be forced to, with a gun to my head, I could get by with using all of my calendars and keeping them solely on the iPod Touch. I wouldn't want to go that route, but I could survive. Whereas right now, iDisk needs replacing. So I started there.
So you're not looking at necessarily sharing files with other people as much as just having your files accessible everywhere you go?
That's exactly it. I mean, I have two Macs at home and a Mac in work, and my important documents, I don't want to stick everything onto whatever solution I use, because I don't have any need to have my photographs everywhere or my iTunes everywhere. That's just ridiculous amounts of data. But my basic documents I want everywhere.
What kind of documents would those be? I try to think about what would I want to have accessible.
Well, I have a folder where, like, I mean, I run a small business, so I keep all of my accounts and invoices and all that kind of stuff. And people are ringing me on my cell phone at any time going, can you check out, you know, when did you last invoice me? And I need to be able to find that kind of stuff.
I see.
So it's, you know, household documents and things. It's about a little over a gigabyte, I think.
Okay.
I mean, most of them are small documents. Like all of my, I have a bunch of presentations I can give in schools and stuff about various astronomical topics, various other topics as well. So I just like to have all of that stuff accessible as and when I need it. And so I can edit it anywhere and I don't have to worry about keeping 20 different versions of it. And was that the version I gave last, or have I edited it and have I lost? Because I actually ended up losing an entire talk I used to give and having to go back to a version from 2 years before where I'd done loads of research to improve it, and that made me grumpy. So that's when I started really using the iDisk. But here in Europe, iDisk is dog slow, like unbelievably slow. You can't actually use it without having the syncing turned on to have a local copy. Because simply clicking on a folder, you have to wait about 10 seconds to go into the next folder, wait about 10 seconds. Utterly unusable without the syncing. And the syncing is really, really badly implemented by Apple.
In what ways?
Okay, it doesn't use a sparse disk image, which Apple have sparse disk images. They're part of OS X. It uses a full disk image, the complete size of your Mobile Me disk. So if you have all 20 of your gigabytes set up for your iDisk, then you lose 20 gigs of disk space on every machine you sync.
Oh, you're kidding me. Really?
Yeah, which is utterly retarded. So I actually set my iDisk down to 2 gigabytes. So I lose 2 gigs in every machine, which is fair enough. I'll tolerate that. But it's all in a single file. So anything you put on your iDisk, which is going to be all your important stuff, isn't backed up by Time Machine. So I can't get the versioning, which is the really cool thing that Time Machine offers. Hmm. So your really important stuff is the least protected of all your stuff.
Well, gee, that makes sense.
Yeah, and syncing has simply stopped working through our corporate firewall and work. Well, I suppose it's an education, but you can't really say an educational firewall, so we'll call it corporate.
Right.
But, you know, so my files don't go over and back to work anymore, which is exceptionally annoying. And I tried yesterday, or the day before, my local copy on my Mac Mini just got corrupted. It just tied itself into a knot. And all it would say is, failed to sync. Last sync failed. No error message, no details, no idea how you might debug it. It just says, last sync failed. And you click sync, spins for a while, then it goes, last sync failed.
Well, and you would think normally for $100, you'd be allowed to call somebody? You'd be allowed to contact somebody to say, hey, there's a problem with this? Right. No.
Yeah, not with Apple.
Not with Apple. Not for $100, you don't get to call anybody. They're not supported. Even if you have AppleCare, you are not allowed to call and talk about MobileMe.
Yeah, it's disgraceful.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from all of their technical, between the Mac Roundtable and here, we've fairly talked down technical stuff. Mm-hmm. But we haven't even touched on that aspect, which is the fact that it's terrible value for money, even if it were to hypothetically work.
Right.
So there's plenty of good reasons to try to run away from MobileMe. I think we've certainly come to that conclusion.
I want to sneak in one other thing on that before we actually get to some solutions here. At the New Media Expo, I saw a talk by a guy named Shell Holtz. He's a consultant to big companies on the importance of using new media for corporate image and things like that. And he was talking about how powerful it can be if a company reaches out to the community through a blog or whatever, through genuine communication. For example, he gave the example of the CEO of JetBlue after that disaster they had. He wrote in his blog post, he said, I'm sorry. And he talked about how powerful that was, that it was very human. You know, he said, I feel really badly about what we did to you. You know, it was very, very genuine. But the next example he gave was how fantastic it was that Apple put up a blog post about how they had messed up 1% of the MobileMe customers and how they were going to give constant updates to let them know what was going on. And he talked about it as being a good thing.
Yeah, if those constant updates were a little more correct and a little more constant.
Well, had happened at all. Idea. It had happened at all, though. So the update they gave, they only did one. They said, we're going to keep you up to date. And then they didn't do anything on that blog post for a week. So needless to say, Allison might have interrupted his talk at that point. And I told him, I said, this could have been a good example, except for the fact that they never posted another post on that page. They did it for a week. There was no communication. And he was appalled. And he told me he was going to take that out of his presentation. In fact, he was going to blast him in a blog post about it. So I was kind of happy to correct him there.
He can switch him in the presentation from the bad to the good.
Or the good to the bad, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
So anyway, enough about slamming MobileMe. So what's a better solution? What are you looking at?
I've been looking at Dropbox, which does way more than just what I'm interested in. And listener Willie gave us a very good review of some of the other stuff it does. What was it, 2 shows ago?
I think so.
Very recently. So I was only interested in replacing iDisk. So I'm looking at it from that point of view. And it works on what I think is a much more simple and sensible technique. It sets up a folder in your home folder called Dropbox, and it synchronizes that folder between all of your machines. So it's a real folder. It's not a silly disk image. So it means it takes up exactly as much room as your files do, and no more. And it means that it is actually within your Time Machine because it's a regular, ordinary folder.
So if you put something in your Dropbox folder, it's actually on your disk and it's on their disk?
Yeah, it's on your disk, but the file gets synchronized. So whenever you change it, the little application that runs and sits in your menu bar, it just watches for changes in that folder. And if a change happens, it sends the change out to your other machines.
Okay.
Or rather, it sends it to the cloud, and then the other machines ask the cloud if anything has changed, and then they get the copy down. But it's a regular, ordinary folder that's just being watched. And every time you change something, automatically that change gets shoved up to the cloud, and then from the cloud gets pulled back down to all your other machines.
I see. Okay.
So compared to
Time Machine would back it up and show versions and all that?
Yeah, because it's a plain ordinary folder. So whatever backup solution you use, it's just there as a plain ordinary folder.
Okay.
So it wins straight off. It doesn't take up ridiculous amounts of space. It's just an ordinary folder.
Well, now let me give an example of where it could take up space, and this is the confusion I have. So Willie turned me onto this as in doing the show, and what he's been doing is he created a folder that he calls NoSilla Cast Segments, and he's been dropping items into there to share with me. So that folder shows up on my desktop. Now, what's odd about it is, so if he puts a 2 gig file in there, he just put 2 gigs on my desktop.
Yep.
So, and the odd thing is, he puts something in there, I can move it out of there. Does it disappear on his version of that folder too? Because if I move it actually disappears from that folder.
If you moved it, it should, yeah.
So it goes...
I don't know. I haven't tested that because I don't care.
Right. Well, I care. The other thing that confuses me is that I can't tell which folders are my folders and which ones are his. I took a screen snapshot. I created a folder called Drop NoSillaCast Episodes here. He has one called NoSillaCast Segments. The folders look identical. You can't tell that one of them's his and one of them's mine.
Yeah. However, you can tell that they're shared folders versus regular ordinary folders, which is all I care about.
Well, only if you blow it up to full-size icons, like half-inch across icons. If you do it in a regular list view, you can't tell them apart because the icon's too small.
Well, yeah, your ordinary folders have no icon. Therefore, they're easy to tell apart.
Well, no, they have icons. They have other things. They have,
ordinary folder just has the little correct mark to say it's synced. That's it.
Okay, but there's like five different kinds of icons within the Dropbox folder. So the one that...
They're just for special ones, though. So once you actually start to use the Dropbox as a new iDisk, all of your files are going to be in there looking completely ordinary.
I don't think so. They all have check marks on them, for example. Everything inside your Dropbox has a big green check mark on it. So none of them look normal.
Well, that's a little overlay put there by the application while it's running. If you turn off the application, that'll go away. So it's not actually an icon as part of the file. It's just a little overlay being put there by the program that keeps on in sync. And actually, it becomes a little blue sync icon while it's syncing the file.
Okay. Well, anyway, back to your problem.
Yes. So basically, from my point of view, it seems to be working really well. I've been using it for a couple of days now, including at work. And it has been successfully syncing files through our corporate firewall.
Good.
So for me, it checks all the boxes. Now, it is beta at the moment, so right now it's free, but I have no idea what's going to happen when it comes out of beta, whether they're going to start charging for it or whether we get 2 gigs for free and then we have to start paying or what the story is. But for now, it's 2 gigabytes and it's a private beta. So I guess we have to keep an eye on where it's going, but... For now, it looks like a fantastic solution. And even if I end up having to pay 50 or 60 quid for it, that's still, in my opinion, worth the money because it works better than iDisk.
Right. So you'd be willing to pay Apple the $100 if everything actually worked. But the fact that it doesn't really, kind of ruins it for you.
Oh, yeah. On paper, I have been a huge fan of .Mac and MobileMe. But in reality, I've hated it.
Right.
Actually, something else I should probably mention. This is under active development, and it got off on a rocky start. Myself and Dropbox didn't get off on the best of terms because I installed it, and then a couple of minutes later, I started getting these really annoying little black boxes showing up at the top of my screen telling me stupid things I didn't care about, which started annoying me very quickly. So I did a little bit of digging and noticed that somehow, magically, Growl had gotten installed on my machine.
Oh, is that where it came from? Because I noticed Growl was back. I used to have Growl a long time ago, but I cleaned off my disk and I didn't have it, and suddenly I've got it again.
Well, there you go. So I wasn't sure. So on my MacBook Pro, I did a screenshot of my control panel before I installed, did the install of Dropbox, did a screenshot again, and hey presto, Growl was there.
Ah. I did notice that I was getting, it wasn't like really useful Growl stuff. Like it wasn't, I've just moved a file up and it tells me that it's finished syncing. I was just getting barraged with little snotty things.
But it's from all of your applications.
Right.
It's Growl from everything. So I had Firefox telling me it had downloaded a file, but I had downloads window open. I could see that for myself. I had, Marzetta telling me it uploaded a file that I was actually watching, and it had all sorts of ridiculous stuff coming from all the time from Adium and from you name it. It just bombarding me with crap, to be honest. So I wasn't happy. So I logged onto their website, fired up their forum, and expressed my opinions, which I think were of the effect that if I wanted crapware bundled with my software, I'd be using Windows, but I'm using the Mac, so cop out of this now.
No, come on. Growl isn't crapware. It's crapware because it installed it without your decision.
Yeah, but to me, it is. It's a bunch of distracting pop-ups I didn't ask for and don't want.
But it's because you didn't ask for it.
Yeah, it may be really of real great use to some people.
Who want
I'm not one of those people. I set up spaces for the express purpose of not being distracted. I went to a lot of bother to set up my machine so I would be free from distractions. And Dropbox goes and undoes all of that work.
Yeah, and in any case, even if it were, like in my case, it's something I want. I do like. I like Growl, but I don't like that they did it without me knowing. They should have said, we're also going to download and install Growl. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's not mentioned anywhere because I kept a really close eye while doing the second install just to see, and there's no mention of it whatsoever. And that's a poor show. And I said to them, look, just because some of your developers obviously have a real soft spot for Growl doesn't mean everyone on the planet does. And it doesn't mean that we want that, you know, I want folder synchronization. I do not want to be constantly harassed with annoying messages. And I got a very sheepish reply from one of their employees saying, yeah, we've had that complaint quite a bit, actually. Our developers are actually rather fond of Growl. But don't worry, it's coming out of the next version, which is being released in 3 weeks.
Oh, cool. Well, that's perfect, so, yeah, right?
So then we were off on good terms again. But I have to say, it was a bit of a rocky start.
No, you were talking
and
about...
And I think it's actually... I don't know if listeners have read... There's what I consider to be sort of a seminal blog post by one of the greatest Mac bloggers, which is John Gruber. And it's called Broken Windows. And his theory goes along the line of, once there's one broken window on a street, it will just explode because it will be seen as it is tolerated in this neighborhood that we have broken windows. And then you get a plague of broken windows. So I think it's very important. The Mac community is free of broken windows. And whenever we see a broken window, we need to react to it and say, no, not good enough. Which is why I took such a strong line on this bundling. Because if you tolerate it, it will happen over and over and over and over again. So you have to put your foot down and say, no, not in this community.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So I think a lot of stuff is... It's really important how were you treated when you had the conversation. The fact that they said, yeah, we're sorry, we understand, and we're going to stop being silly. That boy, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it comes down to communication again. And that's another great thing about the Mac community is that when you contact a developer, you almost always, I have never had a negative experience, you get a positive response from them. They're interested. They want to hear your point of view. They take it on board. They may not always agree with you in the end, but they've had a civil and nice discussion with you in the meantime. And you perhaps understand their point of view better. But in general, they're exceptionally open to feedback. And they deal with it very well.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing you talked about with iDisk is how slow it is. I find Dropbox really fast. When I'm messing with the stuff on my disk... You know, that I'm seeing, like, I don't know how fast it's putting it up there, but when I click on these folders, I mean, they just come up instantly.
That's because they're local.
But isn't iDisk supposed to be local, too? It's taking up 20 gig of my hard drive.
Yeah, you can have, if you have a local copy, then iDisk is pretty instant, too. Mm. It's how long it takes to synchronize it is painfully slow. And if you want to upload a big file to your iDisk, it's horrendously slow. Mm. So... What I found, Dropbox, it's not perfectly fast. It goes up at about 40K, which...
That's not...
Well, no, that's kilobytes, not kilobits. So it's 8 times as many if you put it into kilobits.
Oh, okay.
That's tolerable. I think on MobileMe, if you get 5 or 10K, you're usually happy around Europe. So it's notably faster by a factor of 5 or 6. Okay. But still nowhere near... It doesn't come down to speeds that my broadband could have. So it did take quite a few hours on a new machine to synchronize down the copy of everything first.
Okay. Well, have you run into any problems with duplicates? That's the big issue with syncing, right?
I haven't yet. I'll certainly keep you up to date if it happens.
Yeah.
But for now, it's been perfect.
Great, great. So that's the first half of MobileMe replacement, right?
Yeah, the second half I haven't figured out, and I was sort of hoping that the listeners might give me a hand. Basically, I have a set of fairly simple requirements for what I need from my calendaring replacement, whatever it happens to be. I want to keep using iCal if possible. I like iCal. iCal works well for me. I have third-party apps that read stuff out of iCal, like Anxiety, which I'm very fond of. So I don't want to give up iCal. If I absolutely have to, I'll consider it, but I really don't want to. I want iCal to work. I also want easy syncing to the iPod Touch, which is, again, a reason to keep iCal, because I don't sync over the air to my iPod Touch. I sync by plugging it into my MacBook Pro.
Oh, okay.
Mainly because I keep Wi-Fi turned off on my iPod Touch unless I'm actually surfing the web, because that way the battery lasts for ages, whereas when I turn it on, it lasts for very, very, very little, comparatively. The other thing is I want it to sync to my work machine through the corporate firewall. So those three things are what I want.
So,
and if anyone has any ideas for how I can achieve that without Mobile Me, I will be most appreciative.
Now, how do you, I would assume that just subscribing to the calendar at work wouldn't be good enough?
Oh no, I need to be able to create events everywhere.
Okay. Now, just to let you know, that's a mess in Mobile Me. So I wouldn't even say that this is like to try to match what Mobile Me has. I've been incredibly annoyed with how Mobile Me works. I can create an event on iCal at home, and then I see it on the web version. And when I go into that, I can't edit it, but I can edit it on my iPhone, and the changes will propagate.
That's not good. No, the problem I have is that Mobile Me won't sync through our corporate firewall. And it really should, because we have every kind of proxy server on the planet for it to use. But it just doesn't seem to want to.
Okay.
So at the moment, my stuff I create at work seems to end up in this little island anyway, which is exceptionally annoying and has made it very clear to me why I want syncing. So Mobile Me isn't working in that regard, which is probably the biggest reason I want out of it. Because that's just a critical failure in my book.
Right. The other thing I wanted to tell you was in Mobile Me on the web-based version, there's a whole bunch of functionality that you just completely lose. In iCal, I can create an event like our appointment for today for 10:15, and then I can add you as an invitee. I can include a URL for you to go reference, and I can even attach documents. I can't do any of that on the mobile interface. I can't invite you, I can't put a URL, and I can't do any attachments. So it's just an alarm, you know?
Okay, is that on the iPhone, the web, or both?
The web. I don't think on the iPhone you can do much of that either.
Okay. And yet another reason, I guess, that I want to hold on to iCal.
Yeah. No, I was just looking, I was trying to mess around while we were talking here, is I can view my Google Calendar in iCal. I'm just wondering if there's a way for, and I can create events in iCal on that Google Calendar.
So could I have multiple machines all communicating with that Google Calendar, I wonder?
That's what I'm wondering.
I'll test it out, I guess. I think Google is sort of at the top of my list of possibilities. I'm a little wary, to be perfectly honest, because I don't trust Google with all of my data. But at the same time, I don't trust Apple to not lose it through their incompetence, like happened all of Steve's email, for example.
Right. I'm starting to trust nobody.
Well, the trust nobody would be fantastic, but I guess if you want the advantages of having stuff in the cloud, it's got to be in the cloud.
Well, did you hear this week that I think it was like 12 hours, anyone who had paid for the upgraded service at Google Docs and all that had no access to their email or any other documents?
Yikes.
For 12 hours. If you hadn't paid them anything, you were fine.
Oh, dearie, talk about sending out the wrong message.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know. Then again, a guy wrote into one of the message boards I was on that there's been some problems with Mobile Me taking a really long time to send messages. I sent a message to Steve, and it took 2 days to get to him. This guy had that happen, and it was a time-sensitive thing he was being paid to send in. and he didn't get paid because he didn't send it in on time because it took 2 days for MobileMe to send the mail.
Not good.
So you can't trust Google and you can't trust Apple. Somebody said, why didn't you fax it?
Yes. Pretty much. Although you can't trust fax machines either. I ended up with a lunch I couldn't eat because of a dodgy fax machine.
Ooh. But then again, you do get a confirmation.
Yeah, but no, it was they had faxed the menu for lunch, and it was very, very poor quality. So I thought it was Kung Po, which is not spicy and is actually very tasty. But it was actually Kung Po, which is really spicy and I can't stand.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I ordered me the wrong dinner and ended up sort of picking the chips and leaving all of the nice food behind because I couldn't eat it.
So you can't trust anybody.
No, can't trust anything. Anyway, I think that sort of sums up. I just want mail. I just want calendars that synchronize well without having to worry about them. Just an easy solution that just works, which is, you know, just works is sort of Apple's catchphrase, but right now it doesn't. So I just want something that just works, really. That's it. Is that too much to ask for?
I don't think so. You know, I think you might end up hearing from listener George. He's been sending me some interesting processes he's following to try to sync calendars. But it sounds sort of like you have to keep hard forcing it to me. It's not a natural sync. I don't want to have something I have to remember to go click a button to make it go.
Yeah, likewise. I just want it to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I may end up sort of experimenting, trying to set up scripts or something, but I don't want to go down that road.
Right, because then if anybody changes anything, all the scripts have to be fixed and all that nonsense.
Yeah, I don't want to go.
So that's a shout out to the crowd here that Bart needs some help finding a solution to that. You had one other thing you wanted to tell us about.
Yeah, I just, about 20 minutes or so before we started recording, I just submitted my photo of the week number 26, which occurs to me that it's been half a year that I've been blogging my photo of the week every week. Not really an anniversary, but hey.
6 months. Those are some spectacular photos you put up on your blog. And of course, there'll be a link in the show notes because no one can spell Bouchats, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I've started to just tell people to go to my profile on International Mac Podcast at impodcast.tv because no one can spell my name. So I must look into a new domain name. But Bart is such a common name, I'm going to have awful trouble getting it anywhere sensible.
Well, what you should do is just buy all the domains of all the possible ways we might think of to spell your name.
Oh, God,
have
that's
them redirect. Well, no, it's mostly, is it two S's or two T's? And the C being thrown in there is a real, that's a wild card. So, you know, do one without the C, do two S's and one T, two T's, one S. Yeah, it's probably four or five permutations. Buy those, have them all redirect. Well, that's what I did with my show, because podfeet.com, a lot of people type in nosillacast.com. Fine, I bought nosillacast.com. Then, of course, you got Tim Verporten of the Mac Review Cast, who calls it nosillacast.com. So I went out and bought nosillacast.com, just in case.
Okay, that's three, though. I have a feeling I'd need a lot more than that.
Yeah. My main problem is the S's and the T's. I think about a week ago, I got to the point where I think I can pretty reliably spell your name.
Well, yes, the thing is, I have bartbouchats.ie, bartbouchats.net, bartbouchats.eu, all directing to the one site.
Oh,
so I'd have to multiply by three all of my misspellings.
Or change your name.
It might be cheaper to change my name by Depol, actually. No, I'm going to try to be imaginative over the next while and see if I can pick myself up a spellable domain name.
Sounds good. And you have to check to see if we can spell it in all languages, right?
Oh, goodness. I may end up coming back and asking the listeners for more help.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you checking in again with us this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Indeed we will. And until next time, happy computing.
Well, it looks like that's going to wrap it up for another fun-filled week of the NoSillaCast. Keep all your great letters and audio reviews coming. Send them along to nosillacast@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to have a solo entry from Bart, as I'll be traveling to my dear friend Melissa's house, where she has satellite broadband, which apparently causes a dreadful delay, according to Bart, totally unusable for a Skype call. Since I'll be out of town, it's probably going to be kind of rough for me to come up with a great deal of content on my own, so if you have any interesting audio reviews that you've been holding back on sending in, send them in this week. I could really use a little bit of help here. In any case, thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.